Usually getting a standard residential mortgage is, well, it's like climbing a ladder, right? Every payment takes you one step higher and you're building equity.
Exactly, up to the top.
Right. But a reverse mortgage, it is honestly more like standing on a downward moving escalator. You know, you aren't making payments, so that compounding interest just silently eats away the ground beneath you.
Oh, absolutely. It's a completely different mechanism.
It really is. And welcome to this deep dive into an exclusive September 1st, 2026 Broker Times article. Our mission today is to decode the hidden compliance traps in Australia's booming reverse mortgage market, really just to ensure that you, the listener, never fail an equity release file.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover.
Okay, let's unpack this. The core tension right now is that Heartland Group reported handling about 55% of all new reverse mortgage business,
Yeah, they're sitting on a massive $2.37 billion book.
which is just wild.
Right. And what's fascinating here is that this represents a 19.7% growth in the sector. Practically speaking, that means a huge wave of brokers are writing their very first reverse mortgage right now.
Yeah, and they're probably relying solely on a single lender's accreditation, right?
Yeah.
Because of that extreme market concentration.
Exactly.
But wait, if I'm a broker and I only have the keys to one dealership, say Heartland, I can only sell you a Heartland car, doesn't that narrow panel kind of, give brokers a pass? I mean, you can't recommend options you don't have access to.
Well, you would think a limited panel makes things simpler, but it actually it raises the evidentiary bar for your best interest duty.
Wait, really?
Yeah, because BID is the legal mandate that brokers have to prioritize the client's financial well-being over their own commission. Since you only have one product on the shelf, you must explicitly document why unlocking equity with that specific product was chosen over entirely different strategies.
I see. Like, why didn't the client simply downsize their home? So you have to prove why the type of financial strategy is right, not just the brand of the loan. I imagine taking a massive lump sum up front versus small, regular installments changes that math drastically, too.
Oh, big time. A lump sum starts compounding interest immediately on a massive principal. You have to document exactly why that was chosen over installments.
That makes sense.
And you have to honestly disclose your limited accreditation on the file. Like, if a better option exists outside your panel, maybe the government's home equity access scheme, which lets older Australians draw a modest fortnightly pension loan.
Right, the HEAS.
Yeah, you must document that, even if it means referring the client away and losing your commission.
Wow. Well, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's talk about the timeline. In a standard residential loan, you chat with the client, build a recommendation, get them on board, and then you generate the legal projections to support the file.
Yeah, standard practice.
But here, the law strictly inverts that sequence, right?
It does. ASIC's Section 133DB mandates that brokers must run the calculator and show the client the long-term equity projections before making any preliminary assessment.
But mechanically, why does the law care so much about the order of operations? Like, if they get the document eventually, what's the difference?
It comes down to human psychology, specifically anchoring bias.
Oh, right. Getting attached to the money.
Exactly. If a broker gives an assessment saying, you are approved for $200,000, the client mentally spends that cash. If you show them the terrifying math after they are emotionally invested, they will just ignore the risks. The law forces you to show the math before they get attached.
That makes total sense. And that math is visualized in the calculator's three mandatory scenarios. I was looking at scenario two, which models 0% property growth. Is the point there just to model a worst-case housing market?
It is actually more insidious than that. Scenario two is the most vital tool to demonstrate the sheer force of compounding interest.
Right, because there's no growth to hide it.
Exactly. In a flat market, without property values rising to magically mask the growing debt, the client literally watches on a graph as the interest silently drains their equity over time. There's no market crash to blame it on, just math.
No, wait, I'm a bit confused though. I thought the National Credit Code had negative equity protection built in. Doesn't that legally guarantee the borrower is completely safe?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, negative equity protection just caps the final debt at the home sale value.
So you won't owe more than the house is worth.
Right. But it does absolutely nothing to protect the equity inside the house from dropping to exactly zero.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you won't leave your kids with a bill, but you might leave them with an inheritance of zero. The projections exist to show exactly how fast you'll hit that floor.
So what does this all mean? It means that in the world of reverse mortgages, getting the credit decision right just isn't enough. The the exact sequence of your paperwork, and, you know, knowing when to refer them out for aged care advice matters just as much.
It really does. And this raises an important question. The source notes that the borrower rarely complains. It is almost always the adult children who raise complaints about lost equity 10 or 15 years down the line.
When they realize their inheritance is gone.
Right.
So if a borrower declines family involvement up front, and the broker merely checks a box, saying they asked as a simple checkmark, a ticking time bomb for future family litigation,
yeah,
that is definitely something for you to ponder long after this deep dive ends.